Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you and welcome to Sober Indians Wednesday Night Live. I'm Karen, your host, and tonight we have Anthony coming on to chat for a bit with us. Hi, Anthony. Welcome to the show.
Honey, in our language, that's hello. Bonjour is a greetings, a form of greeting. I'd like to introduce myself in the language first. Ani Bonjour, Atawin Davis, Jaganash Mawin, Indijnikas, Nimki Dota Mandau, Waganaksin in Dota Bendigwas, Toledo, Ohio, and Dunjaba, United States Navy, Jamaganish Indau, Ge'e African Indau. Hello, my name is Anthony Davis in the English language. The creator and the spirits know me as Ananamagetanene, the man who helps. I'm Thunder Clan, and I'm an Odawa from the land of the Crooked Tree. My spirit first sounded in Toledo, Ohio, and I'm a veteran of the United States Navy. And today, I'm celebrating 11,838 days of sobriety. Every day has been a battle, and that biggest battle is myself. And it's been a great journey, and one of the things I've learned the most is that daily conscious contact with my higher power. When that third step happened in my life, when I opened myself up to the Creator and surrendered everything to the Creator, I was introduced to the culture. And excuse me, today is today I realized that the culture is where I get my strength from, and AA saved my life, gave me a whole new way of life. It changed me from what I had become from the cocaine and the alcohol. I started drinking at 9 years of age. And I say that because I drank those two cans of beer knowing what it would do for me. I always remembered the sips of my dad's whiskey or a sip of his beer and how it made me feel. And this particular time, the voices were getting angrier, the glasses were hitting the table harder, arguments were starting, and I didn't want to go through that. And I took two cans of beer and I went behind the garage. And I drank them so that I would be able to go in the house and tolerate what was coming next. And I call that my first drink because I knew what it was going to do for me. I drank it for that purpose. I drank it to be able to tolerate what was going on, to tolerate life, to get through what I was going to experience that evening. as the years went by, all of my siblings, we were either using drugs or dealing drugs. I was an alcoholic. If I did speed, it was so I could stay awake longer. If I was awake longer, I could drink more. Alcohol was my drug of choice. I knew I needed to make a change, and October the 11th, 1988, I admitted myself to treatment, and I've been sober ever since, continuously sober. And I'm passionate and adamant about the value of the 12 steps, that AA fellowship, the 12 steps, the 12 traditions, and seeing those 12 promises happen in our lives. And so I began to work those 12 steps into my daily life. Sobriety happened for me, and that third step happened after 2.5 years of faking it till I make it. I didn't believe in anything spiritual when I came in. And when that second step was working in my life, I knew I was ready for that third step. It was about 2.5 years of sobriety. And so when that third step happened, shortly after that, I met my teacher, Kinomage Manitoulinane, the man who taught me spiritually. And he introduced me to the culture. And it's been a journey ever since. The culture, I don't know how to describe it. I don't know what words to use, and probably because I'm not fluent in a language, because it's hard for us to speak of things spiritually, especially without the language. But anyway, up until this point in my life, to this day, I make that daily conscious contact with my higher power no matter what it is I'm doing. I thank the Creator for everything that's in my life today and everything that happens. Thank you. That's where I'm at today.
Well, I'm glad that you're well on the road to recovery, and I love listening to the language because I think it's beautiful. So, by all means, talk whatever you want to discuss tonight.
I'd like to offer a prayer. I'm going to ask the Creator to guide my words, to guide my spirit, my mind, and my body, so that I can speak good and so that people can understand what I'm saying. Gichimanido, Wayne Dunamuk no den money dog ish Paminga Maya Igziki, Nibagasatum Gidao Adapaneo in the Maywan, Nimki Donamindao, Wapshka Mingan Indigenous. Gwechma Nanamaged Neem Gigido Kidwinan and Nanamaged Kinagwayak. Gizab Nakazan. I'm sorry, Nakazan Kidwinan. Apchigo Kidwinan. Mani dog a key, mani dog wabanong, mani dog zhonong, mani dog a panagishmuk, mani dog kiwaitanong. Nibagasatum gidao atapanel, way in the maywan. Chimigwetch, 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 chimigwetch. Gitchi mani dog, chimigwetch, 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 chimigwetch. Great spirit, the one from where the wind blows, I humbly ask you to accept this prayer, and I humbly ask you to help me to speak good words, so that everyone can hear them with their mind, their heart, and their body, and their spirit. Mother Earth, those ancestors in the eastern, southern, western, and northern directions, I give you thanks for everything that you've given me today, given us today. And Great Spirit, I offer my gratitude for everything today. That's the best I can do with what little bit I know of the language. And, you know, one of the things that I love about the culture, and I'm not going to say culture, our way of life, the Anishinaabe way of life, is that we believe that the Creator is in anything the Creator created has spirit. The Creator created us from the earth. The Creator made everything with a spirit. And that communication, that language, that's how the spirits communicate. That's how the spirits know who we are, is how we speak and whom we're speaking to. And that's the, from what I understand and what I've learned over the years, that communication is a sound. And that sound reverberates through all of creation when we speak it. And the Creator knows that that's us that's calling and speaking, asking to speak to Him and asking for help and giving gratitude for everything that the Creator has given us. And that sound that we make with that Anishinaabemowin, in the language of the first people, is that that's what happens. When we're spiritually in tune with everything, is that we realize that what we're doing and what we're saying and what we're asking for is going to affect not only us, but all of creation. So everything that we do in our life, when we're truly on that spiritual path, that sober path, we realize that everything we do affects all of creation. And so we live our lives so that our life is good, Minho Bimadidzwin, what am I doing that my life is good? As long as I believe that as long as we're doing good, then everything will be good for us. Everything will be good to help us to live that good life. Everything we need to do that is provided by the Creator. To this day, I honestly believe that the second I decided to be sober that morning, October 11th, 1988, everything in my life since then has been provided by the Creator so that I could live this life today. I'm sorry, so that we could live this life today. And, you know, sobriety, man, those 12 steps gave me back everything I lost. Dignity, pride, identity, self-worth, self-esteem, and that was all recovered with those 12 steps. And you know, when I help people today, I try my hardest to help them to understand those 12 steps and how they can change our lives. Only because of my experience, it brought me to this way of life today. And it's a magnificent way of life. We realize that it's not about ourselves, it's about everyone else. Everything else that we need will be provided because we're doing everything for everyone else. Life is tough, I'm not going to argue that. And what we do to get through those tough times teaches us for the next time. And eventually, you know, I believe that we get to that point in our life that we learn to enjoy everything. Instead of being angry, we remain calm and we think it through before we act. I can't today, as an addict and alcoholic, a sober addict and alcoholic, I can't afford anger in my life. Do I get angry when people cut me off in traffic? Yes. Do I get angry when someone, uses a racial slur with me? Yes, but then I also pray for that person. And I pray to the Creator and I ask the Creator to help that person to change so that no one else has to experience that pain that I felt, that anger that I felt. That's not our way of life. And... because of, living that way, I've had the opportunity to meet people from all over the world and being able to communicate in a friendly way. I honestly believe that's all because the way that we live is so that we can live with creation and so that creation can live with us.
Well, I was going to ask you about the 12 steps. Each one is a process, but would you mind going through them and kind of explain a little about each step?
So,
program.
Mm-hmm. Doug Hunter, I knew that was going to happen too, and I didn't set my book in front of me. So, step one. We admitted we were alcoholic and that our lives had become unmanageable. And today, some of us, we have to use, we admitted we were alcoholic and addicted and that our lives had become unmanageable. And today, that first step is an act of humility. And the reason I say that is that we have to admit that we're wrong. We have to admit that we're sick. We have to admit that we're doing what we do because we don't understand why we're doing that. And the reason we don't understand that is because we don't understand ourselves. Something happened to us that changed the way we view ourselves. That act of humility by admitting what we are, admitting that we need help, and admitting that we're seeking help, that's an act of humility. And then that realization of because of our alcoholic and addictive behaviors, that our life is unmanageable. another act of humility and another act of seeking help, looking for help. Debt unmanageability is, you know, we've all heard it, you know, waking up in the morning and expecting things to be different, but we do the same thing we did yesterday and expecting a different day. And so that unmanageability is about understanding that everything that's wrong in our life is a direct result of our alcoholic and addictive behaviors, our choices, the way we make choices. That first step, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol and that our lives were unmanageable. You know, it's the first step to sobriety, admitting to ourselves that we're alcoholic, that we're addicted. In essence, we're saying we're hurting, we're wrong, we've been doing things wrong, and we've been running away from reality, and we've been running away from life, and we're seeking help. Our life is going crazy because of those choices I've made under the influence, and I'm seeking help for that. That first step is major in recovery. Step two says we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. So earlier I spoke of not believing in anything spiritual when I came into this fellowship, and it was because of what happened to me in that Catholic school that I was in from first through eighth grade. And I remember fifth grade, the teacher said that she told me that she was the teacher for my older brother and sister. And she said she always tried to teach. They were stepbrother and stepsister. And my mom had children before she married my dad, our dad. And she was telling me that she was a teacher for my older brother and sister. And this is what she said. I'll never forget these words. She said, and I always tried to teach them that Indians were an inferior race. And my handwriting was never good enough. My knuckles were always swollen. My clothes, I'd come home from school, my clothes were tore because the teachers were yanking me out of my chair because I was doing something that they didn't like. When she said that to me, that's when I realized that everything that was happening to me in those classrooms with the teachers was because I was Indian. And African. My dad was African. My mom was Odawa. And I knew what it was. I grew up in the 60s and 70s, and I knew what that was, and it hurt. It hurt. And I became angry. And I could never understand why, if this was such an all-loving God, why were his disciples allowed to treat me the way they did? And I was an altar boy for the school, for the church. And I was, my younger brother and I, we did such a good job. We were always on call. When the other altar boys didn't show up, they always called us. And, you know, it's funny. I remember, you know, being able to recite the Bible, you know, backwards if I had to. Knowing all of the ceremonies, all the church responsibilities as an altar boy, and you know, I always viewed it as, you know, look at how we've changed this Indian, look at what we've done for this Indian, and I've always viewed it that way. But in my mind, I was proud that I was able to do something right, because everything else was always wrong. Because I was Indian. And when I graduated eighth grade, I stopped believing. And that's why I say that second step, we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. And so when I came into the fellowship, after 20 years of drinking and a failed attempt at suicide and two attempts on my life that I survived. And I was dying that morning. I came to. And so came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. My sponsor told me, I understand you don't believe that you're agnostic or atheist. And he said, that's okay, but you have to fake it till you make it because you need a higher power in your life. And so what I used for my higher power till I could find a higher power was anyone that had more sobriety than me. And if they had 5 or more years of sobriety, they were my higher power because they knew how to live sober. I didn't. I didn't know anything about being sober. I drank 20 years of my life, 24/7. If you weren't helping me get a drink or a drug, I had no use for you. And so 20 years of my life, and I needed a higher power. And so that higher power, that fake it till you make it, that fake was anyone that had more sobriety than me. Because what they had is what I needed and what I wanted. And what I wanted was to be sober. What I needed was a new way of life. And when that second step happened for me, I don't know how I came to believe. I don't know what happened that I did that, but I started praying. And now when I prayed, I didn't say God or, you know, Jesus or Lord Jesus. I was like, hey, man. And that's because I couldn't believe in that way of life anymore because of what they did to me. And when that third step came into my life, step three says, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of the Creator as we understood Him. And the big book says, God, I use Creator today. And I was having a bad day. It was about 2 years and about 8 months of sobriety, and my divorce had been final for about a year. It was hot and humid as heck, and I worked in the factory for Chrysler Jeep in Toledo, Ohio, and it was hot. Clothes were soaking wet because it was so hot in there. We were sweating all the time, and it was just miserable this day. And there was some work that I missed, and they added it to my job, and they didn't tell me at the start of the shift. So they had to shut the assembly line because if this work wasn't done, the car couldn't be driven off the assembly line. And so they called my supervisor. I had to take the tools down to the end of the assembly line and do the work on the car. And for every minute that the assembly line was shut down, it cost the company $50,000. So I was in trouble. And I was about done. And I was going to walk off the job, walk down to the credit union, take out as much money as I could, and go to the bar. I was going to throw in the towel. I was calling it quits. I was done. And my sponsor talked to me about prayer. I honestly believe this is what helped me to start praying. He said, that coffee cup you carry with you. And my kids gave me a coffee cup on my first sober birthday. And it was October when I got sober, and I'm a poet and didn't know it. My birthday is in January, so my children got me a coffee mug for my birthday. And I carried that cup with me wherever I went. And anyway, he was talking to me after work, and he said, that coffee cup means something to you. And I said, yes, it does. And he said, why is that? I said, my first sober birthday gift from my children. They chipped in some money out of their allowance, and they bought me this mug. And to this day, I don't remember what it was. I do remember the word dad on it. And so I carried that cup, was glued to my hand, mowing the lawn, painting the house, driving, work. That cup was with me all the time. And So he asked me, he said, that cup means something to you. And I said, yeah, it does. And he said, so I would imagine you said your children gave you that gift. And I said, yeah. And he said, so when you drink from that cup, you think you believe that your children are a part of that cup, that their thoughts of you is in that cup. And I said, yeah. And he said, so you when you use that cup, you believe that your children's thoughts for you are in that cup. And I said, yeah, and in whatever you're drinking. And I said, yeah. And he said, why? And I said, because it helps me to feel better knowing that somebody cared enough about me to give me a gift to help me drink coffee, which is what I like. So they obviously cared enough about me to give me a cup to help me drink coffee. I said, so that means that they're thinking of me, that they love me. And he said, that's what your higher power is. The next time you need to cry, the next time you're in pain, that's when you need to pray. And he said, so the next time that happens, when you need to cry or you're in pain, you don't understand what's going on, he said, that's when you need to pray. And I want you to pray to that cup. And I was like, oh, hell no. You get no wonder you're an alcoholic praying the cups. Are you out of your mind? and he said, no, that's what a higher power is. Everything you said that cup does for you, that's what your higher power does for you. So when you need to pray the next time, when you're ready to cry, you need to pray. That's when you need to pray. So back to the job. I was getting ready to walk off. I turned around to my table. This was going to be the last car I was going to do. And I was going to do the work on this car, and then I was going to walk off the job. And when I turned around to the table with the tools, with the bench, with the air tools on it, I don't know how to describe this, but it was like all I could see on that table was that coffee cup. It froze me in my tracks, and I raised my hands, and I looked up to the ceiling of the factory, and I said, man, I could sure use your help. And 20 minutes later, it felt like I had a bubble of air conditioning. I had goosebumps. I was so cool. And it felt like I was walking on air, like there was no problem in the world. And it felt like I was walking in on a cloud, because it just felt so light. And I don't know how to describe it other than to say something. There was something spiritual about that. And so I worked out the night, and my sponsor, one of my buddies on the assembly line where I worked, called my sponsor from the other side of the factory. He had a job where he could tour the factory when needed. And so he came over to the job, and he looked at me, and he gave me that look like, what's up? And I said, man, I think I said to him, I think the third step happened for me. And he says, how do you know that? And I told him how I felt. And he said, so what did you do for that to happen? And I told him what was going on. I was going to walk off the job. I was going to go get drunk. I was going to throw in the towel. I was done with the way my ex-wife was treating me about the children. I was done, and I was gonna throw in the towel. And I said, I prayed, man, just like you said. And he said, well, what did you say? And I said, man, I could sure use your help. And this is what he said. He said, what does that third step say? And I recited that third step. We made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. And he said, and what does that step look like in the book? And I says, well, those last four words are in italics. And he said, and what do those words say? I said, as we understood him. And then he asked me, what did you say when you prayed? I said, man, I could sure use your help. And he said, that's how you understand your higher power. You don't have to say God. You don't have to say Allah. You understand your higher power as man. And he said, so that's how you pray. Your higher power is man right now. That's how you pray. And the reason you feel the way you did is that you turned everything over. You surrendered. When you asked for help like that, you were at the end of your rope. You were getting ready to throw in the towel. He said you were at the end of your rope and you surrendered, made a decision to turn your will and your life over to the care of God as you understood him. And he said, step three just happened for you. Step four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Wow, that was brutal. I was an alcoholic. I was an angry alcoholic. I manipulated people. I stole. I was a thief. I was a car thief, robbing bars and stealing cars. I was a criminal. And I'm so fortunate that I didn't serve. I did serve some jail time, but I didn't go to prison or it doesn't matter. But I didn't do any, I guess, severe length of jail. But I was a criminal. I was an alcoholic that was angry. And anger was my cape, and happiness was my kryptonite. I thought alcoholism made me Superman. And anything that made me happy, I didn't like. If things started getting happy, I would do something to ruin that. If someone made me happy, I stopped hanging around with them. They were having too much fun, and I didn't like having fun because I was always angry. So that fourth step, man, I wanted to be sober, and the big book says we will go to any length. And that fourth step, I had to be honest. Brutally honest. It made me look at my character defects, and it helped me to look at why I had those character defects. It helped me to see why those character defects became my normal way of life. And that fourth step, man, revealed who I am. And the fifth step says, we admit it to God, to ourselves, and to another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. Wow. Another act of humility. Another act of honesty. Another act of love. Another act of respect. Truth, bravery, and wisdom. In our way of life, we believe in, or I shouldn't say we believe, the Creator blessed us with seven values: love, respect, honesty, humility, truth, wisdom, and bravery. And today I see that fifth step as restoring those in our lives, because when we're drinking and drugging, we obviously are not living by those seven values. And so that fifth step restored those seven values in my life. And actually, I didn't learn about those seven values until about after about 10 years of sobriety, and an elder asked me if I had ever heard anything about the seven grandfathers. And so that fifth step helped me to see those things in a way that blessed my life with what I have today. Everything in my life today is because of those seven grandfathers. And this is how he explained them to me, only because this is what he said: if I share with you how I learned those seven grandfathers, they're not going to work for you. But if I give them to you the way they were given to me, then you'll learn from them. Because every one of us, each and every one of us, will see those things in a different way. We'll see them in our own way, because each individual is unique. Each individual is just that one individual. Red, yellow, black, or white, we all see everything in a different way. And this is what he said: if I love myself, I can love others, and we'll live with that love together. If I respect myself, I can respect others, and we'll live with that respect together. If I'm honest with myself, I'll always be honest, and we'll live with that honesty together. If I speak the truth with myself, I'll speak the truth with others, and we'll learn to accept that truth together. If I live in humility, I'll never have to worry about being hurt, because I'll always live with that humble spirit, and I'll never have to worry about hurting another or them hurting me. If I'm living in bravery, I'm doing these things in every part of my life. Everything that I do, I'm using these seven values with that. And if I'm living in wisdom, I'm learning to use these so that others can live. I'm learning to live with these so that others can live by them. And so I believe this was in 96 or 97 when he shared that with me. And I've come to value those seven grandfathers, because that's what life is for me today. Life is about others. Life is about living so that others can live. And what I mean by that is that it doesn't matter what I'm doing. It doesn't matter who I'm doing it for, as long as I'm helping them to live a good life. If I can say hello to someone and make them smile, if I can smile and make them smile, if I can help someone feel better about themselves, then I do that. And it doesn't have to be, I don't have to do that for me. I do that for them. Then my life is good, because I feel like I've done my good deed for the day, for the hour, for the moment. And we learn to value that, because there's no greater value than seeing that hope restored in someone's eyes, seeing that sparkle return, seeing that they're standing tall and walking with pride. No better feeling than knowing that you were a part of helping someone's life be better. And wow, those steps. I can't remember what step six is. Humbly asked him to remove these defects of character. And wow. It was hard to believe that after I did that fifth step, I'm on step five. Step five, we admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. That was humbling for me. And I'll share that real quick. A friend of mine gave me a place to stay while I went through my divorce. And the only agreement was that I would pay his utilities. And if I relapsed, I was out. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. I was out if I relapsed. So I took over all his utilities, water, gas, and electric. And our Cocaine Anonymous home group sponsored a trip to Cedar Point. And I rode with him, and I didn't have my license at this time. It took me 18, well, I had them suspended. They were suspended for 3 years. For 18 months of sobriety, I didn't have license. And so I rode with him, and he had a convertible. And sunny day, and the trip started. 10 or 15 minutes into the trip, we were on the road to Cedar Point on our way. Anyway, he said, "Tony, where are you at with the steps?" His name was Harry. He won't mind me sharing his name today. Harry, I said, "Harry, I'm working on doing my fifth step." And I said, "My sponsor liked what I did for my fourth step." And he says, "Whenever you're ready to do your fifth, you can do your fifth." And he said, "And it's up to you who you're going to do that with." And so anyway, Harry said, "Where are you at with your steps?" I said, "I'm getting ready to work on my fifth." And he says, "Well, we got about an hour and a half drive." He said, "I guess now is as good a time as any." I was, oh, man. But that whole hour and a half was spent on that fifth step. And that day was one of the biggest days of my sobriety. It was one of the biggest moments in my life because I really had a good time. I was happy. I was literally happy. And I was laughing. And it wasn't a laugh to get a drink. It wasn't a laugh to get $5 so I could go get some beer or some cocaine. And I was honestly heartfelt laughing. And it was like none of the rides. I had no fear for any, whatever ride came along, I did. There was no fear. I was truly happy that day. And, man, it's choking me up thinking about that day because, my entire life, I was angry. Racism, sexual molestation, sexually assaulted, you know, just nothing to be happy about. And that fifth step released me from all of that because it helped me to see why I needed to do those things. It helped me to, it revealed to me why I was the way I was. And to be able to share that fifth step and to be able to share those wrongs, knowing full well that when I did, my life would be better. Sobriety would be easier for me because I had to let that past go. I can't keep that past holding me down. And that fifth step helped me to let go of that past. One of the promises says we will not regret the past, nor will we wish to shut the door on it. Today, for my recovery, what that means is that I can reminisce about those days and joke and laugh and, you know, laugh about those days and laugh about the stupid things I did. But also to be able to remember those days and to be able to see what I'm doing today helps me to not regret those days, because if I don't regret those days, then I'm on my way to another drink. I have to remember where I came from. I have to remember what I was like, and to be able to laugh about those days and talk about those days without any pain means that I have no regret, because those days made me what I am today. And AA cleared that path for me to be who I am today, helps me to be who I am today, and the culture gives me the strength to live every day. Step six is humbly asking to remove our shortcomings. You know, I guess shortcomings for me today means that I still have those character defects somewhat. And the shortcomings means for me today, for my recovery today, for this person's recovery today, it means that I have to keep my ego in check. It means that I have to use that humility to face every day. I have to use that honesty, those seven grandfathers. And those shortcomings are the days when I feel like I don't need this. You know, I could handle that. You know, I could go back to those old ways. I would just do it better this time. I won't get caught. They'll never understand. You know, they'll never know what hit them. You know, and that's that stinking thinking. And that's what, for me, that's what shortcomings means, is reverting back to those old ways. And in order for us to avoid those old ways, we have to live these 12 steps in our life daily. I wake up in the morning and, you know, thank you, Creator, for this day. Thank you for my life today. I'm braiding my hair in the morning. Thank you for my hair this morning, Creator. Help me to braid this in a good way today. I'm brushing my teeth. Thank you for my teeth today, Creator. everything in the day I'm giving thanks for. In the morning, I like to kind of meditate and ask the Creator, what is my day going to be today? What are you going to show me today? What are you going to bless me with today? And help me to understand that so that I know what to do today. If I make a mistake, help me to change that so that I don't do it again tomorrow. And that's how I end my day also. Thank you, Creator, for this day, the good and the bad. The good so I know what to do tomorrow, and the bad so that I know what I need to change for tomorrow. Wow. I wish I could go get my book real quick. Step 7. Oh, darn, I don't even have my wallet. I keep a little book in my wallet. I'm sorry, I forget what that's...
It's all right. I mean, if you don't remember the rest of them right off, that's okay. We're down. We got like 13 minutes left of the show. So if you wanted to give shout-outs to anyone, you can do that. I think what you said about the steps that we did go over was just absolutely beautiful, and I know that that's touched some people tonight that have listened in on the show.
Yeah, I want to give thanks to Patrick for putting together what he's done. I was in tears when I saw how fast the membership grew with Sober Indians. Man, that, you know, and that came at a time when I needed something like that. I've been blessed with the opportunity to have traveled all over Turtle Island here, and I've met elders and people from different tribes, learned and heard different teachings, but it's all helped me to be where I'm at today. And so I'd like to give thanks, and I'd like to give gratitude, and I would like to extend those 7 grandfathers to all of those people I've met, all of those people that care to answer my questions, all of those people that cared to teach and share their recovery. I wouldn't be what I am today if it wasn't for others. And so I'd like to say thank you to everyone that's taken the time to share their experience, strength, and hope. And especially to the Native warriors out there, those sobriety warriors, because every day is a battle. I know for me it is, because every day that battle is myself. Brings to mind something that happened with myself and my teacher. So when I came home here to Petoskey, Michigan, back in 93, October of 93, and I lost track of what I was going to say, something my teacher taught me. What was I speaking of?
When you had come back from I think it was Petoskey, Michigan, I believe.
Petoskey, Michigan, when I had come to Petoskey, yeah. Michigan. Anyway, I'm sorry. I lost my train of thought there.
That's quite okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. I know what it was. So, Oh, geez, I lost it again. I must be tired today. My teacher, I was talking about my teacher and something that happened with him and I, that I moved up here. I lost it.
Well, I can understand forgetting what it was you were going to say, with it being a long day and a busy day at that. So, you know, that's okay. Maybe it'll come back to mind in a moment.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, I spoke earlier about that choice to be sober. And I honestly believe that the second, the instant that we choose to do the right thing, the Creator provides everything we need to do that. In our way of life, I was taught that our dreams teach, when we're sleeping, our dreams teach us how we're going to live our life. And my teacher said that our visions show us what we're going to do with our life. And so the other day I was doing some research for my job, and I came across this article by an elder that did an interview. I can't think. Gary Raven, I think it was. And I can't remember the tribe in the First Nation in Canada. But what he said was, dreams, remember your dreams. They teach you what you need to do, and they teach you the choices, meanings in your life, and that they show you your life. They reveal to you your life. And so when I saw that the other day, that one of those sentences said, remember your dreams. And growing up, till the day my mom walked on, whenever I was home to sleep, even as an adult, when I came home from the Navy, and I stayed with I asked them if I could stay with them until I got my own place. Turned out to be about 6 months, but anyway, her good night, when she said good night to us, she never said good night. What she would say is, remember your dreams. So my point is that all of my dreams that have guided me have brought me to this point in my life today. My dreams, the elders that have interpreted those dreams for me, and I take tobacco to them, and I ask them to help me to understand a dream. We know what dreams we need to understand, and we know what dreams we can understand. But the ones we need help with, we take tobacco to an elder, and we ask them to help us to understand that dream. And so everything in my life today has been because of my dreams. Everything in my life today has been because of what my mom taught me, to remember my dreams. And those dreams, they show us how we're going to live our life. And when I did my vision quest, they showed me what I was going to be doing with my life. And it is exactly that today. This right now is my vision. This is what I was going to be doing with my life. I was taught that, I don't know the word in our language or how to describe it in our language, but I guess the French word for it is déjà vu. And I was taught that spirits show us our future. And in a dream, they'll show us our future. And when we recognize that dream, when that dream is happening for us in real life, it's like, hey, I dreamt this. And so I was taught that what that means is that the spirits showed us our life. They showed us our future. And the reason they did that is that they knew that we would follow their guidance. And if we followed their guidance, we would get to that point in our life. And these dreams that we dream of the future, that's the spirits showing us that all we have to do is live by their guidance. We have to listen to them. We have to pay attention to see their signs or their messages for us. And so the vision quest, that's all been a part of my life ever since those happened for me. And so, you know, one of my dreams has always been to be able to present our culture, to be able to show our culture in a good way to good people, so that society could see that our way of life is beautiful, that our way of life is real, that our spirituality is real. Everything about us is reality. An elder told me once at a language conference that those 40 days that Jesus was lost, or that they couldn't find him, he was traveling the world to see how people were living with creation. And when he came here to Turtle Island, he left because he said we were living so purely that we didn't need him. We didn't need his guidance, that we were living as his father taught us to live. And I was told by a relative that his grandfather would have been, I guess, my great-grandfather. My first cousin's grandfather, I guess, would have been my grandfather. Anyway, what he told him was, in the old days, and I refer to it as BC, before Chris. And so BC, the fires burned blue. The reason they burned blue is that everything here was pure. Those colors we see in the fire today, the orange, the yellows, that's the poison, that's the negativity. And when we're having those sacred fires, and we're using those fires for the culture, for ceremony, we begin to see it burn blue. Some of it begins to burn blue. And I was taught that what that means is that the healing process is going to be starting for someone. Someone is going to get healing. And the reason being is that when we're doing what our ancestors did, they show that to us. They reveal that to us in that fire that we're doing the right thing, because that purity is coming back. That purity is coming back into that through that fire. Because we're doing what they taught us. We're doing what they did. We're doing what they were thinking of for the next seven generations. One of my elders said, I'm someone's seventh generation. And so whenever we're doing anything, we're not doing it for ourselves. We're doing it for the next seven generations. Our ancestors knew what we were going to be up against. This is why they lived the way they lived. This is why we live by our culture today, because living by our culture is what our ancestors did for us.
Oh, wow. I never knew that fire had ever burned blue. That was, wow.
Wow, that's all I can say about that. I wanted to real quickly thank you for coming on and talking tonight.
And,
I really appreciate you talking.
I want to thank you for asking me, and I want to thank you for your patience with me today. And I always pray for everyone. And I know we only got a couple minutes. One day, I was kind of frustrated, and I went to an elder here in the community, and I asked him for some help. And you know, I was kind of complaining. I was a little frustrated, and he says, "Well, hang on for a second." And he got out some tobacco, and the problem was that people were just, man, I couldn't go anywhere and someone was offering me tobacco to help them with something. And I wasn't not going to do it. I was just frustrated as to, you know, why don't these people give me a break and blah, 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 you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so what he said to me, what the elder said to me was, "I need you to do something for me." And he took out some tobacco and was offering me tobacco. I held out my hand. And he said, "I need you to pray for a friend of mine." And he said, he's going through the same thing. He's going through something similar. He does a lot of good things for a lot of people, and he doesn't know how to do anything for himself. And so much so that he doesn't know how to pray. He's kind of lost his path in prayer because he's doing so much. And I need you to pray for him. And I said, "Sure." And I said, "But, you know, who am I praying for?" And he says, "Well, he has a hard time saying no. He's doing so much for everyone that his family is hurting because he's gone all the time. And, you know, he's just constantly on the move." And he said he forgot how to pray for himself. And he said, "So I want you to pray for him." And I said, "Okay, who is it?" And he set the tobacco in my hand. He said, "You. You have to learn to pray for yourself, Tony."
Wow.
And that's where life is for me today.
That was beautiful, though. I mean, I guess we don't think about praying. You know, no one does really for themselves, but to have someone tell you to pray for yourself, that's
mm-hmm.
very deep and beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Impacted my life. Yep.
I would imagine so. And I think that's great.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate to do this. I could talk way, way, way longer and listen to you talk more about everything.
You know, I love sharing. I do. I could talk for hours, for days if I need to. But it's just the beauty of this way of life, the Anishinaabe way of life. And it's not that I'm all that in a bag of chips, but I love sharing our culture. I just love the beauty of it, the way of life because of it. And so I'm always willing to share, and especially where sobriety is concerned.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you're up to it, maybe you can come back on again at another time and talk some more. And maybe go a little bit more in depth with the 12 steps, with the last few that we didn't get to talk about tonight. And I wanted to wish you a good night and thank you for coming on and sharing everything that you have. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome, Karen. Real quick, before this ends, there's a PBS special Saturday. I don't know what it's on PBS. It's called Warrior Lawyers. I was part of the documentary. They interviewed tribal courts, tribal lawyers. And I cultural resource advisors for the tribal courts, and I was in part of that documentary, and it's going to be airing Saturday, March 13th. I don't know the time, but I would imagine if you went online with PBS, you would be able to find that.
Okay. Well, I will definitely be giving it, we'll definitely be watching it. And everybody else that's out there that's listened to it, definitely look it up and watch the show.
And
thank you for coming on. So we're getting ready to lose total airtime here in just a second if I don't go ahead and end. But I wanted to thank you again and for being so open about everything. I really appreciate that. And I'm hoping that somebody took something from tonight's show and takes it to heart. But thank you, and thank everybody for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone. Miigwech.